Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. Hope you had a restful, safe, healthy holiday weekend. California did hit another milestone amid the pandemic this weekend, with more hospitalized COVID-19 patients now than at any other point this year. The surge comes as the holiday shopping season kicks off. So coming up, we will hear what's expected for the retail industry this holiday season, plus travel and restaurants. How will 2020 wind down for those sectors in California? But first, with details on the record-breaking surge in cases this holiday weekend, is Alex Wigglesworth, a reporter with the LA Times, and her piece in yesterday's paper explains, while we were expecting a surge, some were surprised that it came on as large and as fast as it did. Alex, nice to have you on Insight this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. So where are we this morning in terms of cases? Is it still record-breaking territory?
Sure, definitely. Now 98% of the state's population is living in a county where coronavirus transmission is considered widespread. And there are these restrictions on businesses and gatherings. Particularly in LA County, new cases are rising more rapidly than they ever have before. Even when we had that surge in the summer, the county is seeing more cases over a five-day average than it ever has before. And as you said, there are more coronavirus patients in California hospitals than at any other point during the pandemic. There were more than 7,400 statewide as of Saturday. And before that, our peak was, I think, 7,170 back in July. And that's one that health officials really worry about, because too rapid of an increase in hospitalizations could cause the healthcare system to become overwhelmed.
Yeah, and that ship is no longer off the coast that the federal government had sent four surges just like this one, right? It's no longer there?
Correct, and we had that LA Surge Hospital that's been shut down. I think the plans to use the LA Convention Center as a field hospital, that was prepared, but it never happened. But it's possible, I think, that officials could revisit some of those interventions for sure if we're particular. Because, I mean, one of the things people are saying is that hospitalizations are based on cases 2 to 3 weeks before, because it takes people a couple weeks to get sick enough to be hospitalized. And we already know that cases, we're seeing a lot more cases now than we were 2 to 3 weeks before.
Right.
So we've topped the peak, but they think that for the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's really going to continue to go higher.
Yeah, those weekend numbers on the COVID graph for California just do not look good. Do we know how the bulk of these cases are being transmitted? Is there tracking data out there that show what's going on?
They do contact tracing, but I mean, officials have been saying they think it's just a combination of factors, and it's really difficult to say that it's, you know, just one thing. We had a lot of things that brought people together in mid to late October, early November. We had sports championships here in LA. It was the Dodgers and the Lakers back to back. There were protests over police brutality, protests and celebrations over the presidential election. All that also brought people together to watch TV. The weather got colder. People started coming inside more. We saw more outbreaks at work sites. And a lot of people started to report attending more gatherings. There were some polls and surveys that showed that people were especially going to more small gatherings with family and close friends, where they might be more likely to really let their guard down, not follow all the precautions like wearing face coverings, staying 6 feet apart. And experts also believe there's just like an element of fatigue, that people are tired of following the rules. We've been living with this for a long time now, and people are just exhausted.
Yeah, I was out and about this weekend. I stayed in Sacramento, but I did see a lot of mask wearing, and that encouraged me. So hopefully that message is getting out there, that whether you have the fatigue or not, you got to keep the mask on.
I think that's a really important one, especially when they're trying these interventions that are a little more narrowly tailored. We're not seeing whole business sectors shut down. We're seeing occupancy limits reduced, hours of operation reduced. And so, you know, in allowing people to be out and about more, it's really important that they follow the precautions that we do know kind of helps slow down the spread.
So your piece focused on LA County, which is seeing, as you mentioned, a higher rate of spread. I looked it up this morning, more than all of the other states' large metro areas. Like, LA County has higher rates of coronavirus cases. What are county officials doing to address this?
Sure. So there have been actually like a series of restrictions that have been announced kind of rapidly. The first was that non-essential businesses had to close every night at 10 p.m. and that outdoor gatherings were limited to 3 households. And then around the same time, the county said it would take certain additional steps if the county reached 2 different thresholds for new cases or hospitalizations. And then the county ended up hitting both of those thresholds, one right after another, really rapidly. So the county ended up suspending outdoor dining at
All
restaurants,
right.
and then putting in place a sort of modified stay-at-home order that really looks at, banning gatherings with people from other households and restricting occupancy limits on businesses.
Yeah, that outdoor dining restriction is controversial, right? There's even at le there's at least one city in LA County that's saying they don't want to they're not following it.
Sure. So Pasadena, yes, is they've decided to, for now, permit restaurants to be open. I think that they're actually meeting today to talk about whether it might be necessary to modify that. I know they had some issues with compliance over the past week. They had inspectors out. They ended up shutting down 5 restaurants. They said a little more than half of restaurants they inspected weren't following the rules when it came to distancing the tables and having people wear face shields. But it has been controversial. There are all these business owners saying, what are we supposed to do if we're just shutting down again? This is our livelihood. We don't have comprehensive aid package from the government. They're kind of between a rock and a hard place here.
Right. Yeah, that table distancing. I don't bring a tape measure with me, but I've definitely seen some restaurants that might be pushing the tables a little closer together than they should be outdoors. Sacramento's in a purple county, so we've had just outdoor dining for a few weeks now. What about moving forward? Are there future plans being discussed? And I think I saw something this morning that schools in LA will open.
Yeah, I think that they have been moving forward with some of the education stuff. I do know that officials in LA County have said that if conditions continue to deteriorate, it might be necessary to issue stricter rules that are sort of more like the stay-at-home orders that we saw in the spring, where entire business sectors were shut down, basically like all non-essential retail, and people were told they really need to stay home. So I think that that's a possibility if things continue to get worse. I think, as you said, it's possible that they could look at some ways to surge hospital capacity, add additional beds, maybe staff. I think those are all things that are being considered.
Yeah, I was wondering about the hospital aspect because we're at a record level now. And as we mentioned, those COVID surge case numbers ticked up significantly over the last week, which means a hospital surge on top of the one we're in right now is coming. Has LA County put down any concrete plans to say how they plan to address that?
Not that have been released publicly, of which I am aware. I would be surprised if these conversations weren't going on, at least like on the official level at this point. Because, I mean, they do say, when the healthcare system becomes overwhelmed, it just leads to people dying who did not need to die. And those could be COVID patients, or they could just be people who needed treatment for other emergencies. So I know that that's what officials are trying to avoid at all costs, for
Alex, for
sure.
your reporting, did you get a chance to look around the state at all? Did you just focus on LA County, or did you get to look at California statistics and how we're headed?
I mostly focus on LA County, but I do know that these trends are being felt around the state. I mean, it's a statewide, and that's also an issue when it comes to the hospitalizations, because I know there's a concern that whereas during the last surge, they were able to airlift patients from some regions to other regions that weren't being as hard hit, this time that might not be possible because in the aggregate, it's been a statewide increase in cases, a statewide increase in hospitalization. So it might be hard for one region to pitch in and help the other if everyone's sort of being impacted at the same time.
Yeah, the LA Times has a really good COVID map that shows the entire state county by county in a color coding scheme. And I noticed that Lassen County and Imperial County, also Kings County, have exceptionally high rates. All three of those are rural counties. So I imagine that their hospital access is limited. So we might see some of that transferring that you were talking about.
For sure. And, you know, when it comes to rural areas, access to healthcare can be difficult. You have a lot of essential workers, a lot of farm workers, a lot of multi-generational households. And there's not always the ability to provide culturally competent healthcare or messaging. So there's definitely a lot of factors, I think, at play there.
Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving is traditionally, anyway, a big travel holiday. And we did see that the travel numbers ticked up to some of the highest air rates of people flying that we had seen so far this year. Do we have any travel statistics over the holiday weekend for the LA region? And is that expected to be a factor in the transmission of cases going forward?
I haven't seen any official statistics, but I do know that something that officials were concerned about, especially as you said, cases are already surging. So if there is another bump from gatherings over Thanksgiving or travel or even Black Friday shopping, it's going to be a surge on top of a surge. And it's really going to bring us to new levels that, you know, officials have never dealt with when it comes to both new cases and hospitalizations and eventually possibly deaths.
In some cases, Alex, there's been pushback against county health officials who, you know, try to implement tougher restrictions as they've been doing in L.A. County. Does the health official there have mostly support from the community, or are you seeing this sort of rift, you know, between the people and the health official that's essentially the messenger?
I think there has been definitely that tension. There was a protest, I think, yesterday outside of our LA County Health Director's home, calling for her to relax restrictions on businesses. And I think it speaks to a really delicate balance that officials are trying to strike in getting the surge under control. I mean, again, it's unprecedented. It's the worst that we've seen. But sort of taking more narrowly tailored interventions to allow some things to stay open, not shut everything down again. But still, you know, people aren't happy. Businesses, especially, like, they're not happy. They're really hurting.
Yeah, Alex, we got a message from Shelley, who sent us an email here at Cap Radio, who says that she's noticed outdoor restaurants, they put in tents that are mostly closed up. So it's like you're inside, you know, there's not a lot of air circulation. And I did notice that just yesterday at a place. And I thought, well, why would I go in that tent? That's like being indoors. Are the restaurants there, they have a lot of tents, or has the county said anything on that? Does there have to be like a certain number of walls that need to be open?
Yes. So I've seen that too. And I believe the county actually just recently issued new guidance saying that there needed to be a certain proportion of open space, that it couldn't be those tents that have four walls. Because people do say, you know, that really replicates an indoor environment.
Right.
And it could lead to spread.
Right.
So, yeah. I've seen them too, for sure.
And I get it. I mean, it's getting colder out there, and especially in the evening hours, you know, you get those heaters turned on and you want that warm air to be protected inside, but by doing that, you're just holding all those aerosols inside, so that doesn't do any good. Alex, anything moving forward that you want to add?
No, I mean, not to parrot health officials, but I mean, I think it's important for people to know that experts are saying that this is a worse surge than the last time, but when it comes to the excess deaths, they're at this point, they might still be preventable if people do what they're supposed to, you know, stay 6 feet apart from others, don't gather, wear your face coverings, wash your hands.
Yeah. Alex Wigglesworth, a reporter with the Los Angeles Times. Thanks so much for joining us on the Monday after a holiday weekend. So we very much appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. All right. Up next, how will the retail and hospitality industries deal with the pandemic as we move further into the all-important holiday shopping and travel seasons? And do you feel safe when shopping? I'm not talking about on your iPad, like going into a place, dining or traveling. Are you simply writing off the holidays this year? You can shoot us an email to insight@capradio.org. Again, insight@capradio.org. Or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. And you are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our focus today is the current COVID surge that's threatening to further darken an already tough 2020. This past weekend kicked off the holiday shopping season just as hospitalization numbers in California were reaching record levels. 2020 has been, I guess you could call it, a roller coaster year for retail. Mass shutdowns have fueled bankruptcies and thousands of retail store closures for big name companies like JCPenney, J.Crew, Pier One. Meanwhile, titans like Amazon and Walmart have only gotten stronger and more profitable, mostly due to their online businesses and ability to supply really everything you need when you're stuck at home. Retailers that depend on foot traffic and other smaller outlets are feeling the most pain. And both large and small retailers have been forced to rethink how customers experience their stores to minimize spread of the virus. Joining us now is Lee Peterson. He's the Executive Vice President of Thought Leadership and Marketing at the retail consulting firm WD Partners, based in Columbus, Ohio. And Lee has more than 30 years of experience as a retailer and is a leading voice in the future of retail. Welcome to Insight, Lee. Nice to have your expertise this morning.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate it. And you recently told a Columbus TV news station that nothing has accelerated the retail landscape quite like COVID-19. Can you give us some insight and context into how exactly the pandemic has affected the world of retail?
Well, the interesting thing about COVID, I think, in terms of retail, is that it's an accelerator and not a disruptor. And I think at first we were looking at it as like, well, you disrupted our business and, you know, you made this happen. But really, everything that was happening beforehand just got sped up. And really, the other kind of major macro factor about COVID is that it sort of bore out a hole in the middle of retail. So this is going to eventually benefit local retailers as well as the big guys that you just mentioned on the previous segment.
But how might it help the? I know there's probably some local retailers here that are thinking, well, I want to hear more about that. how might they be helped by this?
Well, I think for local, I think the tough part of local is over pretty much. Like if you were able to exist, I think, through this first 6-8 months, then I think you're at a distinct advantage because, like I said, I think a lot of really big, very large middle players like JCPenney and Kohl's and people like that are going to go out of business, which affords a huge opportunity, obviously, for the big guys, but also for the little guys. Because I think a lot of times those big guys are, for the most part, and you can see from the numbers from this past weekend, those larger companies will use e-commerce and buy online, pick up in store, touchless retail, third-party delivery and stuff like that to get goods to consumers. But so if you want an original customer experience like you used to have, like a nice customer experience where you could talk to a person, you could actually be inside some great ambiance, you're going to go to a local store.
Yeah. In fact, Lee, I was just speaking with some friends over the weekend, and they were telling me that they are shopping less, but they're spending about the same amount because they're buying higher quality. They're not buying throwaway clothing. They're buying higher quality stuff from local retailers. And so you think that's a trend that we might see move forward?
Yeah, for those who can.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You sort of miss that. There was an article in the New York Times this past week about the nostalgia of shopping in a store. And I thought, isn't that funny? Because, 5 years ago, 6 years wasn't nostalgic. But everything that they listed in there in terms of a customer experience, I think is still really important to people. And I don't think we're ever going to lose touch with it. But if you go back to the large players in Walmart, Target, you know, Amazon, all these guys, that experience, that intimate experience just doesn't exist there. Now, convenience and price and selection and all those things do. So for the most part, you're going to spend 80 cents of your dollar there. But then the leftover is going to be for experience. I don't think there's any question about that.
What do you think went wrong for the major brands? I mean, they have the ability to ship, you know, like the JCPenney's and the Kohl's. You can order online from them. But why were they not able to take advantage of that setting the way some of the other players did?
Well, there's a plethora of reasons for that, you know, and even going back to Sears or JCPenney and other legacy companies that operated with a certain MO for 100 years. And so you also develop Macy's, you know, is another example of that. There's huge like legacy programs on how you operate. And when you have to fail fast and when you have to move to the next, like within a week or two, those companies are just not capable of doing that. With the exception of, you know, a couple of behemoths like Walmart and Target, who also happen to have the wherewithal, which is another factor that the other guys didn't have, to just say, go ahead, drop everything we're doing. And I don't care what you say, you've got to get buy online, pick up in store implemented right now, whatever the cost is. Whereas somebody like JCPenney was kind of not able to do that, not able to see the importance of it, and then not able to execute at the same time.
And I imagine some of those other retailers that we mentioned that just, you know, aren't faring all that well, also have high real estate costs for the rental of these spaces at shopping malls, right? Where some of the Walmarts and Targets aren't necessarily in those. It doesn't cost them as much to have those stores that are often places that aren't shopping malls.
Yeah, freestanding units. But then there's also the. There is a real estate cost there, and it can be really costly if you either have to, like all the Best Buys are leased.
Oh.
So those are all leased spaces. Mm-hmm. And not everybody owns that real estate that they're sitting on. So, you know, even if you vacate, you still own that land and you still have to do something with it. And there's nothing worse than a giant, ancient, big box sitting there. You know, to have to convert, that's a really difficult proposition for a lot of companies. I think, you know, going back to what you were saying about malls, that's a totally different problem. And think about that. A lot of those guys were essential that we mentioned before. If you're in a mall, I don't think anybody was essential in a mall, maybe a restaurant or two. But so they pretty much got shut down for 3 to 4 months nationwide for the most part. And to come back from that was really difficult, on top of the fact that people just didn't go shopping even when they opened their doors again. So if they weren't set up to do e-commerce and buy online, pick up in store, which for a mall merchant is very, very difficult, then they are also kind of in that middle portion that's getting borne out right now.
Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Best Buy had been doing pretty well heading into the pandemic and had figured out a way to get customers into the store, you know, even though a lot of electronics you can buy online. How are they doing now?
Great.
Oh.
Best Buy is doing great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they fall into that category of where else are you going to get it? You know, I mean, they really don't have a lot of competition for what they do. You know, telephone stores and places like that really can't match the type of expertise. And what Best Buy did a long time ago was really brilliant. They focused on what they call their blue shirts, which was an employee. The other thing is that they bought Geek Squad, and we were just talking about it the other day. Like, do you think they knew when they bought Geek Squad how important it'd be to have somebody come to your house and implement something? I don't think so, you know. And so they have those two components going for them right away, but they also were able to act really swiftly when the pandemic hit and they got closed down. So they created appointment only. Scenario which they're maintaining. They did buy online, pick up in store, and they also did it from a store by store perspective. So they give the managers the freedom to create their own buy online, pick up in store out in the front of the store, or the curbside pickup, or whatever you want to call it. But they each had their own freedom to do it, and that's one way to move really fast. And I think they did a fabulous job of that.
I guess we really can't talk retail without talking Amazon, right? Amazon was doing well before, doing even better now. What is it about Amazon's model that just has them thriving the way they are?
Well, a lot of people know this, but their mission is to be the most customer-centric company in the world. And they truly have been. But I call those the basics, you know, pretty much where I want something fast. This is what I want. You have this. Get it to me. Is it a fair price? Some of those fundamentals they executed flawlessly from day one. And then they've also, because they're organized more horizontally than they are vertically, they were able to say, okay, we have a project here that's going to be Amazon Go. You know, we're going to do this touchless convenience store. So let's get that done, get it out of the market, figure out what works or what doesn't work faster than anybody can even think about knocking us off or doing something equivalent. And so there's a hundred. One of the startling stats about them to me is I think from 2017 to 2019, they increased their revenues by over $100 billion in that 2-year period. And, you know, they pretty much invented the marketplace type of scenario here, or they took advantage of the smaller ones that existed and made a huge marketplace. I mean, they're going to be a tough one to stop. They're also going to be a tough one to break up in that they have Walmart to compete with them. And Walmart is a competitor and they're still bigger than them. So you can't go in and say, we're going to break up Amazon when Walmart's just as big or bigger.
Yeah,
so that's a tough one.
I was wondering about that. I was thinking about it in relation to Amazon, but I hadn't thought about it in relation to Walmart. And we've seen these giant retailers before that stumble and fall. You know, Sears is a huge example of that. What could happen to disrupt an Amazon or a Walmart that I guess they would love to know that too, right? So that they can avoid it. But is there something that's easy to foresee?
Well, there is one thing that could throw a monkey wrench into all of this, and that's a company called Alibaba, right, out of China. And I think at the end of the day, you're probably talking about splitting up a pie, you know, limited size pie. But nonetheless, if Alibaba is allowed to compete, they're allowed to compete on a global scale right now, but they can't really compete in the United States. They're trying through a lot of their more recent efforts, like Tmall Global, to get smaller merchants in the United States on their website and to sell goods in China. The sell goods here still isn't happening, but if that does happen, which you can foresee, then you've got three in terms of a competitor of that size that really get it, that fail fast, that to your point are constantly looking for what those failure points might be and trying to solve for them right away. I mean, look at the evolution Walmart's gone through now to stay like on top of that pile is really, really admirable. But Alibaba could throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing.
So there are millions of Americans that are still out of work and may not have the cash to go around and spend. By this point in the pandemic, they might be out of credit to go around and spend as well. So how much will this slowdown hurt the rebound for retailers that we might see in 2021?
Well, one of the things I noticed this weekend is that Americans are hell-bent on doing whatever they've done before. So millions of people traveled for Thanksgiving. And, we watch football, we watch baseball prior to this. And, you know, we realize there's a pandemic and you know, we've got to do things differently, but we're going to try to be as normal as we possibly can. And I really think that's going to play out for this holiday and for, you know, whether you have the wherewithal or not, you're going to do the best that you can to have a good holiday. So I think that the real repercussions of the haves and the have-nots is not really going to be felt until sort of first quarter, the beginning of next year. But I think everybody's going to put on their mindset, like we're going to try to be what we were before and have a good Christmas, you know, darn it, because we had a really tough year. So I think we're on a little bit of a holding pattern for that. We've got some new leadership. We got some positivity going on. There's a vaccine on the horizon. There's going to be you know, a bill that's definitely going to be passed to help people. So, like I said, I think that repercussion is going to be put on hold for a while. So we should probably just enjoy it while we can.
That thought of
all of us,
that thought of the vaccine coming is really encouraging. Our show on Wednesday will be entirely around that. So if you're listening right now and you want to know more about the vaccine, we've got some great guests lined up for Wednesday. Lee, I want you to give us some historical perspective. How does the pandemic slowdown compare to other economic slowdowns in U.S. history, and why we might see it end differently?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm a cyclist. So I look at the pandemic as almost like climbing a really steep hill. And I think that, you know, the recession that we had after 9/11, and then the Great Recession of 2009, 2010, were more of, you know, lower level hills, if you will. And that, yeah, it was stunning. It took us a while, I think, for the Great Recession to realize that we were really in trouble. And then it really hit home. And so we had a steep decline sort of after that, but we climbed back out of it slow motion. I think you're going to see, you know, this pandemic hit us in the face much harder. There's a much steeper hill to climb. You saw companies, again, accelerate towards the backside and accelerate forward as well. But I think that, you know, once the vaccine, we were all looking at this thing as like, well, it has a finite end to it, which is a lot different than the last couple of recessions we've been through and anything in the 80s or the 70s in terms of equivalence. So, you know, I think you're going to see, and we're already feeling it from a consultant perspective, that retailers are sort of moving forward and becoming what they want to be next. I mean, we realize like the retail, like we call old retail of the 90s, you know, I mean, it was, oh my God, it's 20 years ago. There's absolutely no comparison. Remember when people used to go to malls and, you know, things like that.
Right.
So I think to become the next is the focus. And I think they're going to come out of this. A lot of retailers are going to come out of this in a really strong position, including locals who realize they could be global in their basement. You know, if they have the right product, they could be global as much as anybody else, as much as Alibaba or Walmart. So I think you're going to see us come out of this a little bit quicker, maybe a lot more like a check mark, but not as slow, I think, as the past two recessions. Got hit in the face, but I think we're going to come out of it. And also that window, I mean, can you imagine when 60% of the people, 70% of the people get vaccinations and we have to wear little badges, we can just act like we have a normal life. At least that's the dream.
Right.
A little fast things pass. Are going to change dramatically. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Are there aspects to the retail shopping experience that we are now experiencing that you expect to stick around post pandemic?
Yeah. Interesting. You should ask, because we just did a study on that. And we asked people, we asked 2,500 consumers across the United States, like, you're shopping right now, you're buying online, pick up in store, you know, you're getting delivery, you're also getting third party delivery, and you can go to stores. After this is over, how are you going to shop? And the results came back. About 52% of the consumers said that they were not going to shop in stores going
really?
Forward.
More than half. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they said that this is now like the way that I'm going to shop. This is the primary form of how I'm going to shop. I'm going to shop e-com from now on. I may go and visit stores later. We found out in qualitative, but it's not going to be my primary form of shopping. And, you know, in particular, like there's age groups like seniors that rarely used e-com before this and now had to, and now are saying, well, wait a minute, what was I thinking about at all? And then Generation Z, I don't even think has been out to a store in so long, or when they do, it's just to meet people.
Yeah.
So they're already on board.
I think
that's a big one.
I think the plexiglass dividers are going to stay that, between you and the cashier. That's just my guess. But
I heard that masks are with us for probably all of 2021.
Yeah, it's a cultural shift. greater personal space too. I think it's going to be a while to get back to where you're feeling comfortable within just a foot of somebody. So Cyber Monday is today. We had Small Business Saturday, Black Friday, of course. Do we actually see upticks in shopping for those sectors on those days?
Yes, you still do, but they're pretty much insignificant to what it was even, let's say, 10 years ago, you know, ancient history. We found out a long time ago that when you were open on Thanksgiving, you flattened out Black Friday. But now, I mean, we can shop in all those ways that we've just discussed anytime, anywhere, anyhow, and you can find any price anywhere, anytime, anyhow. So I think the idea, the notion of Black Friday, I've been around long enough to know the actual meaning of Black Friday, which as a retailer, we thought was a secret internal term, because black means we were making more money on that day than any other day of the year. We used to actually mark stuff up for Black Friday. And so the meaning was long diminished. And I think it's overdue to sort of go away, considering I saw a car ad in October where they said it's Black Friday in October, and you know,
right,
that says it all.
That really waters it down. So you are out of Columbus, Ohio, which
Correct.
You
yeah.
refer to as the retail capital of the world. Why is that?
Just about every specialty retailer that you can think of, other than maybe the Gap, is based out of here. Abercrombie and Fitch, Victoria's Secret, the Limited, who I worked for a long time ago.
Those are all under one person, right?
No.
Oh.
Abercrombie and Fitch split out. Justice split out. Justice is part of Ascena now. But all those companies started here. Big Lots is here. A lot of different companies are here. So it's predominantly like an insurance town. It's a white-collar town. We have a huge university here. All of that feeds into the retail organism that's here.
Yeah.
It's a huge retail town.
And I imagine having all of that retail right there and your expertise, right, helps you to predict and spot trends a little earlier.
There's a lot of, commingling.
Right. Well, Lee Peterson is the executive vice president of thought leadership and marketing at the retail consulting firm of WD Partners Incorporated in Columbus. Hey, thank you so much for taking your time to share that expertise with the Inside
My
audience.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
All right. Still ahead. Not only are the holidays big for retailers, but the travel and hospitality industries also, of course, thrive this time of year, typically. A question is, especially with the ongoing COVID surge, how will it all play out this year? Do you plan to travel in the coming weeks? Are you meeting up with coworkers or friends for a holiday-style meal out? Well, let us know how the pandemic is altering your plans, if at all. Shoot us an email, insight@capradio.org, or use the Twitter hashtag #AskInsight. And this is Insight on this Monday morning here at Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our focus this morning is the ongoing surge in COVID-19 cases, which hit a record in California this weekend as the state saw more hospitalizations than at any other time since the pandemic began. This during a holiday weekend that typically serves to kick off the entire season. So how will California's travel and hospitality industries navigate this surge and a continued rise in cases expected because of Thanksgiving gatherings? The hospitality industry has been among the hardest hit in 2020, and that could only get worse as we enter the winter season and more shutdown restrictions. Everything from where we eat, stay, to how we travel has had to adapt to COVID-19 in some fashion. Lynchy Kwok is an associate professor in the Collins College of Hospitality Management. That's at Cal Poly Pomona. And he joins us now. Welcome to Insight, Lynchy.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So when we say hospitality industry, we mean hotels, restaurant, airlines, right?
It's actually more than that, like also convention events. And so pretty much anything about leisure could be part of the hospitality industry.
I was wondering about if the gig economy is separate or if they're part of it, you know, Airbnb, Uber, DoorDash.
I think it depends how people see it. I see Airbnb, it's a big portion of the lodging industry. Mm-hmm. So definitely part of the hotel. And we cannot, in today's, when we're dealing with pandemic, I don't think we can separate the delivery, like the DoorDash and all those servers. So right. I think they're also part of the hospitality industry.
Professor, we just discussed how retail has seen winners and losers depending on their business models heading through the pandemic. Can you tell us exactly how hard the hospitality industry has been hit and whether there's some winners and losers?
Yes. Well, I give you some numbers. Like 2019, I think the whole, let's say, hotel industry, we're running at about 62.1% occupancy and ADR at $131. But then in April, that was the hardest hit to the industry. The U.S. actually only running about 21% of occupancy. Mm. Like that's one third of the room were occupied. And then the ADR or the daily rate, average daily rate, $70.18. So it's a lot lower.
That's a huge drop.
Yes. But as you said, there's some business models may be more resilient or maybe okay during the pandemic. We do see some business coming back a lot faster than the other segments, like in the lodging industry, for example, Airbnb is doing a lot better. It got hit actually in April. It dropped 90% of occupancy, like the booking. I won't say occupancy because Airbnb uses different metrics, but then the booking dropped 90%. But then in July, Airbnb already picked up the occupancy and they actually have more bookings than last year.
Oh, wow.
In 2019.
Right.
So it's a lot of improvement. I guess that's why Airbnb want to file IPO later.
Mm-hmm.
Within the hospitality, like within the traditional hotel products, we also see extended stay hotels are doing better.
Extended
when
stay.
When we say extended stay hotels, yeah, that means usually a hotel with at least a kitchenette or a full-size kitchen. So those hotels are designed for people who stay for a little bit longer term.
How do you feel, Professor?
Yes, go ahead.
How do you feel about the average daily occupancy rate heading into the pandemic? It seemed like it had gone up faster than the rate of inflation over the past 10 plus years or so. And every time I would see a listing for a hotel price, I would be. Honestly, I'd be a little shocked. Like, wow, I remember when spending that much on a hotel room would have been a real luxury place, and this one's not so much. So did the pandemic at all act as maybe an adjustment for that average daily rate, or am I just completely off in my thinking?
I think you what you said makes good sense, but it really depends on the demand and supply. Hmm. So there's a strong demand for lodging facilities and people want to travel. If you look at the air traffic, 2019, indeed, I think people travel like flight a lot more than 2018. If you just look at the number of those air traffic. So those actually will help with the hotels. And I think the demand is, because demand is high, so people, airfare is a lot cheaper and the guest price is not that expensive. I think that motivates people to travel a little bit more and the hotel when they're doing business, so when they see the demand is high, they will increase the price a little bit. But of course, now they cannot increase the price anymore because it's most of the places are very struggling. But leisure market in another, if I go back to what I said earlier, we're not looking at the segmentation, but we look at the location-wise, I think leisure market's usually a little bit better, like the beach locations. Mm. Or national park, like a lot of if you have a natural drive, places with natural drive usually would get a little bit better a performance than the other.
Yeah, because people want to be in want to be in places where there's not a lot of crowds. So you know they're going to these more outdoor, mountainy, beachy places instead of cities.
Yeah, but yes, I think that's very good. Very good point. But also, I did not talk about the restaurant industry. I also the data actually said also quick service restaurant like the fast food, they actually was doing a lot better than the full service restaurant like the fine dining restaurants. And the number actually national statistic actually show in April the fast food restaurant this sales actually dropped 41%, but starting in June they already picked up what they used to be in 2019. Mm-hmm. So now the fast food restaurant are doing okay, but it's only those full service independent restaurant actually are very struggling. Many of the independent restaurants actually closed the door for good.
Within that fast food or fast casual area, are there any specific franchises or chains that you think are handling this better than others?
I won't say anyone doing any better. I think they're all trying best. I do see a lot of new changes in the restaurant, or maybe we can expect in 2021, we'll see a lot of new design of the restaurant. Those fast food restaurants, they all trying to improve the process. They look at how many seconds they can improve when you go do through the drive-through or pickup services. Yes. Uh-huh. The national data sets actually it takes longer because there's a higher demand. So I see new store design, Chipotle designing new store, Taco Bell rolling out new store design, McDonald's working on it, Burger King's working on it. So everybody's trying to try to roll out new store design that possible new features we will see. We'll probably will see more drive-through names. Mm-hmm. The restaurant actually, McDonald's introducing like triple drive-through names stores.
What type of
and
drive-through?
Also triple. So now they may have one drive-through name or two drive-through lanes, but then they will make it into three. And then Taco Bell making the new store, they decide they have two drive-through lane, but one drive-through lane is designated for mobile pickup only.
Oh, I see. Right.
So they want push people to go through mobile pickup to speed up the process. Panera Bread, I think they actually did very quickly. They react to it very quickly. They sell some of the grocery in because they cannot get out of the inventory. I think back in April, so they try to sell some inventory, but they also utilize the technology for mobile pickup. So when people order pickup in the store, but as their car approaching to the store will notice, okay, this customer is coming close by.
Oh, with a
better get ready.
GPS, right?
Yeah.
And I did see that Chipotle is opening their first all digital locations as well. I want to talk quickly about
the digital kitchen.
About the transportation side of traveling. Commercials for Amtrak are touting air filtration and social distancing in the individual cars. And of course, the airlines have left the middle seat open in some cases. How long can that last?
I don't think that will last that long, actually. My personal prediction, I think as long as the vaccine comes Hopefully it will come soon, and a lot of people are taking the vaccine. And then when people see the number drops, right, I think people will pick up and go back to travel again. I also, this is also my personal opinions, I also think people tend to forget things. So maybe like a few years later, people probably won't remember or care as much. Like they don't wash their hands as often now. So that's probably, I don't know, but
Professor
personal.
Lin-Chi Kwok, an associate professor in the Collins College of Hospitality Management at Cal Poly Pomona. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I appreciate
that. Thank you for having me.
And that is Insight for today. I'm Randall White with producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta. Technical director is Mark Jones. Engineer, Antonio Munez. Insight's managing editor is RM Sarkissian. And Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow on Giving Tuesday.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.